Hi, welcome to Colonial Williamsburg, past and present on history.org. This is Behind the Scenes, where you meet the people who work here. That's my job. I'm Lloyd Dobbins, and mostly I ask questions. For Women's History Month, I'm asking Kristen Spivey, who is a program manager in public history development. And my first question is, what is public history development?
Well, public history is really the study of how to present history to people in an accessible fashion. So public history development is developing programs that are accessible to the public.
Mm-hmm. How do you develop accessible programs for women in the 18th century?
Well, first of all, you want to know what women, and not just women, but people today, want to know about women in the 18th century. Mm-hmm. And, of course, one way of finding that out is to ask them. We do surveys and find out what questions there are that people have. And then we develop the programming around those ideas. But needless to say, however I will say it, is that some women who work here have their own ideas about what they want to tell the public. Mm-hmm. And essentially what I do is to work with them in developing the programs that they want to present. And thus far, we've proven that what we come up with is pretty popular.
What do they want to present?
Well, for instance, we have a group of performers, and realize that not everyone here is a performer. We do have people who are interpreters, who are tradespeople, and I will get to those. But we do have performers who do plays and scenes from plays. And so within that group of performers, we have people who will be presenting scenes from 18th century plays that speak to the roles of women in the 18th century. And some of them are, you know, dramas, some of them are tragedies, some of them are comedies. Mm-hmm. And all of that gives a view of women in their time, which is a unique aspect, I think, of that particular kind of presentation, because you're seeing how they viewed themselves when you do a written play that is then presented.
Mm-hmm. Somebody, a woman, name unknown, 21st century, hasn't studied history. Are they stunned, shocked, surprised by what women's role in the 18th century was, or do they sort of accept it and go, ah?
Both. Always both. There are those who are not surprised because, unfortunately, in the world today, there are still women in certain cultures that we, at least here in America, tend to be aware of who are very circumscribed. Mm-hmm. And women in the 18th century, their roles were very circumscribed. They did not, could not vote. They were, in effect, one with their husbands, and the one, when they got married, the one they became was the husband, which had its advantages. It was not entirely a disadvantage. A woman who was married could not be sued in court, so her husband had to go with her if she was brought up before the court for something. He was responsible for her. To pay her debts and those sorts of things. And it was seen as a form of protection for women. Now, it was also true, though, that if they were not married, if they were, and this still exists, a femme sole, if they were a woman alone, then they did have access to the law. They could be sued in court. They could own property. There were a lot of things that they could do. And actually, it's funny, many women today are not aware of the freedoms that women in the 18th century could have. They actually think they're more circumscribed than they were.
I learned fairly recently that women in that period could not sue for divorce.
Well, neither could a man. It wasn't like...
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
It wasn't something that
Wrong
women couldn't
that.
Do. It was something that just simply wasn't available in America during the colonial period because you could get a separation at bed and board, which meant it was a legal separation, and they could take separate households, but it did not allow for remarriage because it was not... In order to have a divorce, a true divorce, it required going back to England. And, of course, there wasn't anybody here, for the most part, who was willing to go to the time and expense of separating themselves fully from a spouse. It was just simply not here. It was not available here.
Well, if you've never heard of it, you don't particularly want to do it anyway.
Well, they were aware of the institution of divorce, just as they were aware of the institution of matrimony. But since it wasn't accessible to the majority of people, it just wasn't something that you considered. They were made aware of certain protections. For instance, when a woman married, it was expected that her husband would not destroy her dower. So whatever she brought to the marriage and whatever they acquired within the marriage, he could not then destroy, i.e. he couldn't sell it out from under her and leave her destitute in the case of his death. And so if there was a piece of land that he wanted to sell, he could not just go ahead and sell it. He had to get his wife's permission. And in order to assure that she was not giving her permission under duress, she would be separately examined, which means he wasn't there. She would be examined by magistrates from whatever court had jurisdiction and then give her consent or not. However, I think there was probably a certain amount of duress anyway, because you still got to live with the guy.
Yeah.
So if you say no, but the court might well advise that it would not be in her best interest to have that particular piece of property sold, in which case, of course, they would then act as protection for her.
How has the interpretation of 18th century women changed in colonial Williamsburg over the past 5, 10, 15 years?
It's come into existence.
Oh, okay.
That's the big change, is that it is acknowledged that when you present history, that you're not automatically presenting the entire story. We've gone through cycles, if you will, of the way in which we present history here. And for a long time, of course, it was and you will pardon me saying this, the great white fathers. It was Washington and Jefferson and George Wythe, Peyton Randolph, Patrick Henry, all names that should be familiar to many school children today, we hope. But they had wives, and they had children, some of them, not all. And those wives and children were affected by the things that these men did. And, you know, we've gone through cycles where we've literally pushed aside the great white fathers, which is in itself a mistake, because they were there too. But we've also come to see the importance of examining daily life, that when certain things occurred, life still went on. You know, babies were still born. Households still had to be managed. Businesses had to be kept up. During every portion of history, whether it's the Revolution or before the Revolution, during the Seven Years' War, there are so many big events that we tend to look at in history, but the fact is that people lived before them, through them, and after them. And life literally went on. There were marriages during the wars. There were babies born, and you know, people died from things other than wounds or anything else.
Actually, I was reading some history and surprised at the number of women who died in childbirth, and then going back through the medical history, not surprised at the number of women who died in childbirth. It was really kind of often fatal.
Yes, and it actually this Women's History Month this year will be examining some of that. We have two programs, one of which deals with fashion and health, presented by both our milliner and millinery shop and apothecary shop in a dual program. And it won't be presented at either of those sites, but instead taken to another site in the historic area, and they are joining together. They also happen to be sisters, so it makes it really nice. But they've developed this special program, and it deals with, you know, fashion. And that I haven't seen the program yet, so I can't speak to exactly what it is, but I have seen other things that dealt with the idea of fashion and motherhood. How do you deal with a pregnancy when you have stays and long skirts and after the birth? Are you nursing, and how do you deal with that? So there are a lot of different things. And then how fashion can actually affect your health. This is not the 19th century we're dealing with, so we're not looking at these horrible contraptions that women were literally caged in. But there were still some health issues to do with fashion.
This is probably the 19th century, where you had corsets and all those terrible, terrible things. You can see where they were trying to make their waist as small as they could. I do not remember 18th century fashions being that restrictive.
They aren't.
Am I?
No, they aren't. And the shape that they were attempting to achieve was done kind of within certain limitations. Mm-hmm. It's kind of funny because we actually have examples in the museums of pieces from the 18th century, and most of them have been altered one way or another through time. But we do have baby stays, so infants as young as 6 months would be put into stays, and they were meant to help them stand up straight. That was the idea. It was to help their posture.
At 6 months, you don't stand up.
No, you don't. But sit up. You know, when they're learning to sit up at 6 months. And then a baby of 18 months to 2 years might be put into a different style of stay. And it's boys and girls. It's not limited to girls.
Oh.
The idea being that it creates a certain shape. And then as they grow older, the fashions, the way the clothing is cut is still going to have an impact, both for men and women, in the way they stand. But the men, or the boys, leave off their stays when they are breached, whereas girls will generally keep those. And we know this because there were actually entries in parish records, and the parishes were the ones who took care of widows and orphans. Mm. And there was money set aside to provide stays. So they were not seen as a luxury or simply a fashion statement. That was seen as a necessity, and nobody should have to do without it. But we have, like I said, the baby stays, and then we also have stays for women who were well endowed in every sense, so that the stays were made to fit the shape of the woman instead of made to change her shape. Okay. It basically gave a cone shape, and even a very large woman could make her waist look smaller in comparison to her hips by the addition of the hoops. So if you look at some of the styles of the 18th century, yes, there were some women who were just teeny tiny little things and their gowns looked so beautiful and elegant. But there were also women who were considerably larger and yet who still looked quite elegant because the clothing and the underpinnings gave a particular shape, and it was that shape they were attempting to create with the stays and the hoops.
Okay, you said two things, didn't you? Two things you're doing differently this year?
Well, there's another program we have for our tradeswomen, or with our tradeswomen, and the second one is just as fashion grows up, because you can't extricate women and children. They kind of go together. And so we also have a program on the changing fashions for children. And the idea, you know, you have one set of clothing that a child would need, a newborn, and then that changes as they grow up. Mm-hmm. And so that's another program that's going to be kind of taken out of the millinery context and taken elsewhere so that we can speak very directly to that particular aspect of the trade. Now, we have a returning program, too, that is, it's so much fun. It's women in trades. And we have a lot of women in the 21st century who are in the trades, and it's not always, no, the millinery is a woman's trade. But we have a lot of women in all of the trades in Williamsburg. So we have a foundry woman, we have a silversmith, a cooper, basket maker, the women, it is all women at the apothecary. Now, there were not women apothecaries, but these women have done the study of medicine in the 18th century. There were female wig makers, and we have all women at the wig maker. So there are women in trades, and they face some interesting challenges because guests come in and may or may not expect to see a woman at that trade. But the fact is that there were women in all of the trades in the 18th century, and that takes them by surprise. Our Women in Trades program allows the women in trades to step out of their shops, to come together in a panel, and discuss some of those issues. And the program is very open. It doesn't have a set number of questions and answers and that sort of thing. Instead, it's kind of a free flow between what the guests want and what the women want to talk about.
That's Colonial Williamsburg, past and present this time. Check history.org often. We'll post more for you to download and hear.